Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Monday, January 8th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. More repercussions from the Ethiopia-Somaliland port agreement.
Minister of Defense resigning from the government in protest of the deal. The opposition parties, particularly the main opposition party, also expressed a caution. So there has been a mixed reaction.
Zimbabwe school teachers are boycotting tomorrow's opening of schools to demand a cost of living salary adjustment. Zambia postpones the opening of schools from today, Monday, to January 29 because of a cholera outbreak. 82 candidates are declared ineligible in the DRC troubled December 20 elections.
Most of them are accused of having hijacked voting machines and facilitating false votes in their favor. Others are accused of using ballot stuffing in their electoral district.
And U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken meets with several Arab leaders in the Middle East amid growing regional tensions. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley Sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. President Hassan Sheikh Mohamed of Somalia has signed legislation nullifying the recent memorandum of understanding between Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed and the president of the self-declared Republic of Somaliland, Musi Bihi Abdi. Somalia says the deal has no legal basis. Ethiopia and Somaliland defended the agreement, which leases about 12.5 miles of sea to Ethiopia in exchange for recognition from Addis Ababa, according to Somaliland officials. On Sunday, the defense minister of Somaliland resigned in protest over the deal. Haroon Maruf of the Somali service speaks with Somaliland-based legal expert and analyst Gule Ahmed Jama about how the accord is being seen on the ground.
Ethiopia and Somaliland has been in good relations since 1991. And Ethiopia is a huge economy, one of the fastest growing ones in Horn of Africa and in Africa. It's landlocked and it has a huge population. So Somaliland has been trying to access that economy. But this deal seems unexpected to many observers in here, because the attempt by Somaliland to convince Ethiopia to use its ports is not news, but to grant military peace to Ethiopia, a powerful neighbor, is not something that was in discussion. So it's quite new to Somalilanders.
And how is that seen locally? What is the reaction of the population, the elites, the politicians?
There's a mixed reaction. The pro-government supporters, of course, welcomed it, and there has been some protests organized by the government to support the deal, but there were also other protests that took place in many cities in Somaliland. Latest happened in Porama, which stood against the deal. The Minister of Defense resigned from the government in protest of the deal. The opposition parties, particularly the main opposition party, also expressed a caution. So there has been a mixed reaction with very strong views against it, and government supporters trying to explain why the deal is good for Somaliland.
And do you think this deal will be implemented?
This deal will face a lot of challenges. First, it will face challenges from the government of Somalia, which will use its diplomatic relations, of course, to pressure Ethiopia to withdraw from the deal. But also there will be some internal challenges. The people who are not happy with this deal, for various reasons, will try to stop it. The opposition demanded the president to table the deal to the parliament. They wanted the deal to be transparent and the parliament to be able to scrutinize and approve it if it is acceptable, and reject it if it is not acceptable. So the government of Somaliland will have a lot of convincing to do to convince many people, including the opposition, that this deal is good for Somaliland.
And the Somali government nullified the deal. It argues it's illegal, and it considered Somaliland as part of Somalia. You are a lawyer. Do you think they are right or wrong?
This is very interesting. Why? This issue is very common in unrecognized states. In 1991, the government of Somalia has lost the effective control over the territory of Somaliland. That's when Somaliland declared independence from Somalia. But under international system, Somalia is a recognized state. So the entire international community still holds Somalia as a legitimate government. Nonetheless, Somaliland is the one that has effective control, which means what happens internally in Somaliland is controlled by the government of Somaliland. And that challenge, where you have a government with the recognition, with international legitimacy there, contesting the legality of the government that has the effective control of Somaliland in this case, but doesn't have the recognition. And that's where the contestation is taking place.
Gule Ahmed Jama is a Somaliland-based legal expert and analyst. He spoke from the Somaliland capital, Hargeisa, with Harun Maruf of the Somalia Service. There was yet another problem with the Democratic Republic of Congo's December 20 presidential and parliamentary elections. The country's Electoral Commission, also known as CENI, declared ineligible a total of 82 candidates, including three government ministers and four governors, due to fraud. Reporter Al-Katati Sabiti Jaffa is in the eastern DRC city of Goma. He tells me the latest development has raised more uncertainty about Congolese voters.
The Electoral Commission sought out yesterday a long communique in which 82 candidates were disqualified because of electoral fraud. Among them, 80 are members of Union Sacrée, which is the political platform supporting President Tshisekedi. One of them is the governor of the capital city of DRC, the city of Kinshasa, and three of them are ministers.
According to this report, Jaffa, they are disqualified because of fraud. What kind of fraud do you think they might have been engaged in?
Most of them are accused of having hijacked voting machines and facilitating false votes in their favor. Others are accused of using ballot stuffing in their electoral district. And you must know that 15 of 26 provinces of DRC are concerned by this problem because these people are from different provinces.
We know already the DRC election had some problems. So with these disqualifications, how would this impact the rest of the electoral process?
This situation had impacted negatively the electoral process because now we have a lot of clashes on social media, on media, between candidates and the Electoral Commission. And as I said before, most of them are from... So people and opponents are asking now, if CENI, the Electoral Commission, accepts now, as there was some people who did fraud, who did they vote for the president, as they are all Tshisekedi supporters? And even between Tshisekedi supporters, we also found many clashes on social media and even on normal media. So this had impacted negatively the process because the Electoral Commission had to announce the results of the parliament at the national level 2 days ago, but they didn't because of this problem. And we don't know how CENI will resolve it and what will be after this, because now all opponents can get away to charge the government and CENI to do not be serious when organizing this election.
That was reporter Jaffa Al-Katati speaking with us from Goma in the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo. The United Nations top human rights official voiced alarm on Sunday about rising ethnic tension and calls to violence in the Democratic Republic of Congo following the disputed December elections. According to the French news agency, the AFP, UN High Commissioner for Human Rights Volker Turk says he is very concerned about the rise in ethnic-based hate speech and incitement to violence in the Democratic Republic of Congo. Listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, January 8th. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And still to come on our program, Samson O'Malley Sports. School teachers in Zimbabwe are boycotting Tuesday's reopening of schools unless the government gives them a cost of living salary adjustment of $1,000. Obert Masarure is the president of the Amalgamated Rural Teachers Union of Zimbabwe. He says their demand is motivated by taxes introduced this year by the country's finance minister and an increase in the cost of living. Finance Minister Mthule Mbe says the new taxes will help the government generate revenue to maintain and develop new development infrastructure. Masarure tells me the teachers will stay away from classrooms until the government gives them a pay increase.
The cost of living in Zimbabwe is shot through the ceiling, but unfortunately the salaries of teachers have remained stagnant. The Minister of Finance introduced a package of austerity measures, which included a list of taxes and levies, which pushed the cost of living high for the ordinary people. Teachers are earning $300 currently, but the cost of living is way up above $1,000 per month. So it's no longer possible for a teacher to go back to work on Tuesday. They are starving because of underpayment. They can no longer afford accommodation. They cannot even afford to pay school fees for their own children. That is why the teachers are saying government should at least review their salaries before they can commit to work again.
How much notice did you give the government? Because Tuesday is just the next day. One would say you did not give the government enough notice.
For the record, we have given government enough notice. When we closed the schools in December, we advised government that they had to work on a salary review over the holidays. Unfortunately, the government didn't attend to that issue. We kept on making follow-up letters, writing to them, follow-up letters, asking them to really call for an urgent meeting to review the salaries. But government has remained silent. And we have always been raising these issues. It's not a fresh issue. It's an issue that has been going on for a very long time. Leaders will lose their right to education because they have an uncaring government which is failing to pay a living wage to its workforce.
Help us understand, please, what is the minimum salary of a teacher in Zimbabwe? Because I'm thinking that perhaps the demand of $1,000, one would think, is it too much?
Teachers are currently earning around $300 per month at a time where school fees for one child at a boarding school is now around $800. Rentals for a family of six is now around $200 to $300. So the money is too paltry. The salary is way, way below the cost of living. So teachers are earning starvation wages. And we believe that government has capacity to review the salaries upward.
So when the teachers are refusing to go to class or teach, what about the students? Are you taking the students into consideration?
It's not only the teacher who has been affected by these austerity measures. Learners themselves are also affected. Government has also introduced some new tuition fees that have to be paid by learners in government schools. Because of the increase in the cost of living, schools have also hiked the levies and school fees. So most parents are also failing to pay the school fees. So it is the collective responsibilities of the teacher, the learner, and the parents to come together and push for reforms that can ensure that parents can also be able to afford to pay school fees for their children. So our struggle is intertwined with the struggle of the parents, and we are in agreement that we have to fight together to save our education. The learners deserve motivated teachers.
Are there negotiations going on right now for a resolution before Tuesday?
No negotiations are going on. We've written to government requesting a meeting, but then they didn't respond. We are hopeful that to Monday a meeting can be called if government is sincere about delivering education for our people. So we are still confident that we can be able to meet with the employer and find a resolution to this issue so that the learners do not continue to lose on their right to education.
Obert Masarure is the president of the Amalgamated Rural Teachers Union of Zimbabwe. He was speaking with us from the capital, Harare. Zambia has postponed the opening of schools from today, Monday, to January 29th because of a cholera outbreak. The Lusaka Times quotes Education Minister Douglas Siakalima as saying that the government wants to prevent the spread of the disease. Zambia's health ministry reports over 4,000 cholera cases and about 150 deaths since October 2023. Information Minister Cornelius Mwitwa tells me the government has been educating the public about how to prevent the spread of the cholera.
The Kwerela situation in the country has been a great source of concern to government and to the citizens. This has been triggered by the rain season, and unfortunately, Kwerela appears to be one of those diseases that affect primarily urban areas where sanitation is not up to date. The situation this year sort of got out of hand or exacerbated because of scanty rains. You know what happens with cholera is that when you have enough rains, the water is able to flow, bacteria dies. But when you just have downpours of stagnant water, that is fertile ground for this kind of outbreak to come about. So this is what has precipitated this situation. But the health authorities have been on hand. I think in the last 2 or 3 days, the numbers of reported cases associated to cholera, they are subsiding. It is expected that this situation will be contained very quickly.
So, Minister, what are the measures, the preventive measures to avoid this cholera situation?
Well, first of all, one thing that has been done, firstly, is to sensitize the public. And the Ministry of Health and the Ministry of Local Government have upped their sensitization programs to ensure that people get to know the drivers of cholera. And number two, of course, the government has instructed that all those who are selling food along streets and so on, which has been one of the situations in very unhealthy and unsanitary conditions, all those issues have been banned. All those people getting water from, wells, shallow wells and so on, all that has been, banned. The government is trying to ensure that all the citizens, particularly in those affected areas, do access clean and safe drinking water, which has been chlorinated so that this situation can be arrested.
Let's assume I'm a parent. And the government is saying that it's going to be 3 weeks. You're postponing opening for 3 weeks. I mean, how do you know by then that the cholera situation is going to go away?
Well, the government, of course, has to work with calculated estimations by way of experts, looking at the governmental intervention or measures that have been put in place, and also the expected lifespan of this situation, given the interventions. It was expected that the situation would be fully dealt with at that time. And the government also, as you know, retains the right on assessment by the expert to extend for another period if that will be necessary.
Cornelius Mwitwa is Zambia's information minister. He was speaking with us from the capital, Lusaka. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken met with several Arab leaders in the Middle East amid growing regional tensions related to the Israel-Hamas war. Separately, Israel made it clear on Sunday that no Palestinians will be forced to settle outside of Gaza, but that the war will continue. VOA's Veronica Balderas Iglesias has the story.
U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken's agenda was packed with high-level meetings in the Arab world Sunday as part of his efforts to ease regional tensions and prevent the widening of the Israel-Hamas war. The latest conflict began when Hamas launched a terrorist incursion into Israeli territory on October 7, killing around 1,200 people and taking about 240 hostages. After meeting with his Jordanian counterpart, Ayman Safadi, Blinken toured a warehouse of the World Food Program.
It is imperative that we maximize assistance to people in need. Not only do we get it to Gaza and into Gaza, but once it's in Gaza, that it can be effectively distributed, equally needed everywhere in Gaza. We'll be working on that in today's ahead as well.
The top U.S. diplomat also visited Qatar and held talks with Prime Minister Mohammed bin Abdurrahman al-Thani. During their joint news conference, Blinken rejected recent statements by some Israeli cabinet members calling for the forced resettlement of Palestinians outside of Gaza.
These statements are irresponsible, they're inflammatory, and they only make it harder to secure a future Palestinian-led Gaza, with Hamas no longer in control, and with terrorist groups no longer able to threaten Israel's security.
The expulsion of Palestinians from the Gaza Strip is not the Jewish state's official position, clarified Israeli President Isaac Herzog during an appearance on NBC's Meet the Press.
A cabinet of 30 ministers where it's not the security cabinet. A minister can say whatever he wants. I may not like it, but this is Israeli politics. But really, I'm saying outright, officially and unequivocally, this is not the Israeli position.
The current war won't end, however, until all its objectives are met, reiterated Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu during a cabinet meeting.
The elimination of Hamas, the return of all our hostages, and the promise that Gaza won't pose a threat to Israel anymore.
Pressure keeps mounting on Israel to protect Palestinian civilian lives, and Blinken said he'll bring up the topic again during the discussions he'll hold this week in Israel. Veronica Valderas Iglesias, VOA News, Washington.
It is time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you too, James. We begin the sport with team arrivals for the 34th edition of the Africa Cup of Nations finals in Cote d'Ivoire. Morocco became the first side outside the host nation to arrive in Cote d'Ivoire for the Africa Cup of Nations. They landed in Abidjan on Sunday. The FIFA World Cup semi-finalists landed at the Félix Houphouët Boigny Airport in the afternoon amid local traditional drumming and dancing to welcome the side to the host country of the Continental Showpiece. The delegation was met on arrival by the Ivorian Minister of Transport, Amadou Kone. Mr. Kone, who personally supervised the arrival of the first team for the tournament, was accompanied by the Ambassador of the Kingdom of Morocco to Cote d'Ivoire, His Excellency Abdelmalek Kitani. African champions Senegal set to arrive on Ivorian soil on Tuesday, the 9th of January 2024. Staying with the African Cup of Nations, the Super Eagles of Nigeria walloped Al Gahabia FC, a local team based in Dubai, 12-0 in a training match in Abu Dhabi on Sunday. The team Al Gahabi play in the third division. The bigger test for the Super Eagles will come on Monday when they face an AFCON-bound team, Guinea, in a final warm-up game before they jet out to Lagos. The Super Eagles are in Group A of the 2023 AFCON and begin their quest for a fourth title with their opener against Equatorial Guinea on the 14th of January. The Super Eagles will then confront the Elephants of Cote d'Ivoire on the 18th of January before a final group phase clash with the Wild Dogs of Guinea-Bissau on the 22nd of January. On Saturday, host Cote d'Ivoire fired a warning shot to their CAF Africa Cup of Nations rivals by thrashing Sierra Leone 5-1 in a friendly ahead of hosting the Continental Showpiece. Away from the AFCON now to rugby, where Kenyan national women's rugby sevens team, the Lionesses, will be in action at next weekend's Challenger Series in Dubai, where they have the chance to qualify for the first time to the prestigious World Sevens Series. The Lionesses begin their campaign in Pool B against China on Friday morning before facing Czech Republic in the evening. Team captain Grace Adhiambo says qualifying for the World Rugby Sevens Series will be a dream come true in her long-standing career.
We are hopefully, and we know that what we want when you're going to the first tournament of the Challenger Series, we want nothing but being on the top of the table, which will be enable us to be in the knockouts at the last leg of the Challenger Series.
In athletics, Ethiopia's Tigzit Kitema made a stunning debut over the classic distance to win the Dubai Marathon in 2 hours, 16 minutes, 07 seconds on Sunday, smashing the course record by more than a minute in the process. And that's it for this Monday's edition of Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a very good Monday. And that is it for this Monday, January 8th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for beginning your week with us. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing that you will have a great week.